Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk. We have a busy docket for you today, so let's get right to it. First, there's been a new motion filed in the Lori Vallow matter. And the question is, what does it tell us about Lori Vallow's status? I'll explain it. Second, the Supreme Court agrees with Bill Cosby. Alec Baldwin speaks again. We have an update regarding the fake kidnapping that took place in California years ago. Is this a new trend? We'll talk about that and put this in the who knew category, but you learn something new every day when in this business. And then finally, the dumb criminal of the day. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich. This is Crime Talk. It is Monday, March 7th, 2022. Now, you know the drill. We got to do this every time. If you haven't done so already, hit the subscribe button, hit the like button, hit that little bell so you receive notifications when we go live or put up new content. And remember, tomorrow, Tuesday, live, 6 p.m. Mountain Time, right here. And if you can't watch us, you can always listen to us by downloading us on any of your favorite podcasting apps. Now, before we get to the docket, we have to help out our sponsor. The sponsors are the ones that help keep Crime Talk going. Well, here it is, ladies and gentlemen. If you hadn't noticed, things can get a little tricky in the world. You have to somewhat expect the unexpected. But when the unexpected happens, it's a little too late to prepare. That's why you have to be prepared early. That's why I'm urging you to go to crimetalkprep.com. And when you do this, you can order a 3-month emergency food supply and get $50 off. Now, you think, why would I need 3 months of emergency food supply? Well, if something happens, guess what? It's not going to be just you, but it's going to be for your family. All right. I saw the other day where it takes 90 gallons for a single person, 90 gallons of water for a single person over a 3-month period if you need to take care of yourself. So when you go to Crime Talk Prep, you can order, you know, just a few meals. You can order a year's worth if you want to. Order what you want. But the point is, you need to take care of yourself. If you haven't noticed in the last couple of years, things can get a little crazy. And now they're literally, I don't know, talking like World War III. Who knows the way things are going these days? But the point is, you better be prepared. So go to crimetalkprep.com, get your emergency food kit. Not just for you, not just because I say you should go do this, but do it for your family. All right, let's get to the docket. Lori Vallow, all right. Now, the Idaho Department of Health and Welfare, through their attorneys, have filed a motion with the court asking that the two accompanying reports referenced by their motion be placed under seal. Now, needless to say, Judge Boyce immediately granted that the documents be filed under seal because there are privacy rights that the defendant has, particularly as it goes to her medical records as well as to the restoration process. So what does this really mean? Well, they're still getting status reports, okay? Now, we should see here in the next couple of days, all right, and we can watch the jail as well. If for some reason Lori Vallow is transported back there to the Madison County Jail, then we know that she's been restored. It's been a psychological miracle. She has been restored. But if she's not, what does that mean? It means she's probably still not going to join us. And here we are now over some 6 months into the whole restoration process. And I'm not a psychiatrist. I'm not a psychologist. I'm just telling you from my own personal experience of dealing with people that have gone down to the state hospital, the professionals down there, the very smart professionals who look for malingerers and have ways of identifying the malingerers, can send them back rather quickly. And when I mean quickly, I mean within 30 to 60 days. She's been down there now, what, 6-7 months? If she was faking it, if she was truly malingering, they being the professionals, would have identified that. So we'll have to see, but my guess is that the reports simply state that Lori Vallow is still not back to restored status, and therefore she needs to remain at the state hospital. We'll wait and see. We just don't know because, well, somehow they don't want to share that with us. And it's been pretty tight-lipped over there in Idaho. Normally something slips out on something of this nature, but not on this one. So we will continue to wait and see. All right, next on the docket, the United States Supreme Court, well, they agree with Bill Cosby. If you make a statement, your word means something. I remember, as you may remember, the Supreme Court has said today that it will not revisit the Bill Cosby case and that the disgraced comedian will remain free after his sexual assault conviction was overturned on due process grounds. It's not a technicality. It's called due process. It's a fair trial thing. You know, people should look it up in the Constitution every now and then. I know you don't like it, but the reality of it is it's just not fair what they did to Bill Cosby. Okay, I get it. He's a creep, but even creeps are entitled to due process. As you may recall, the Pennsylvania Supreme Court last year threw out Cosby's conviction, saying that the prosecutor who brought the case was bound by his predecessor's agreement not to charge Cosby. As is typical, the Supreme Court did not say anything in rejecting the case. Now, Cosby is 84, and he's the first celebrity convicted of the sexual assault in 2018 during the Me Too era. The jury found him guilty of drugging and molesting a Temple University student back in 2004. And Mr. Cosby spent nearly 3 years in prison before Pennsylvania's high court ordered his release. Now, Cosby's lawyers have long argued that he has relied upon promises that he never would be charged, and he gave truthful testimony in an accuser's civil suit back in 2006. Those admissions were later used against him, even though the then district attorney said he would not do that. Yeah, it's called honoring your word. And even if you're an elected official, I know most, well, let's face it, all politicians, any side of the aisle, you can't trust a word they say. This just kind of proves it. And the Supreme Court and the Pennsylvania Supreme Court said, yeah, we're going to hold you at your word, so choose your words carefully. Now, the only written evidence of this promise is a 2005 press release from the then prosecutor, a guy by the name of Bruce Castor, who said he did not have enough evidence to arrest Cosby. The release included an ambiguous caution that Castor will reconsider his decision should the need arise. The parties have since spent years debating what that meant. Castor's successor, who gathered new evidence and arrested Cosby in 2015, says that it falls short of lifetime immunity, which is basically what the court said it was. They doubt that Castor ever made such a deal. Well, then, as a lawyer, he probably should have memorialized it a little better. Now, one little side twist here. What does this mean? Okay, where would this issue come up again? Oh, that's right, Ghislaine Maxwell. And then I'll tell you a little practical practice tip, something that I noticed just the other day. Obviously, one of the issues that will go up on appeal for Ghislaine Maxwell was the whole immunity issue. As you may recall, that guy named Jeff made a deal with the United States attorney down there in Florida. And then charges were brought in New York, and everybody said, hey, there's an immunity agreement. And they said, well, you can't bind this particular office, the United States Attorney. Even though it went to the highest levels at the United States Attorney's office, the United States Attorney said, you can't bind this office. Okay, I get it. Don't really believe it, but that's okay. Practical point. The other day, I get a plea agreement sent over in a case. And what language is in that particular document? A sentence or two basically saying that any agreements contained herein only bind this particular office that's dealing with the case and not any other office or the overall Department of Justice. So I know the courts have not given it much weight at the lower level, but I think the appellate courts will, because frankly, the appellate courts usually are a little more logical, less emotional than the district courts, who feel like they got to do the right thing, view the evidence as though it's true, blah, 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 all that stuff, right? So I just find it rather interesting that the Department of Justice, who says you can't bind one office, is now making it absolutely clear that you're only binding one particular office to resolve a case and not anywhere else. Is that the Ghislaine Maxwell effect? I would say possibly yes. Next on the docket, Alec Baldwin speaks. And where else could he have spoken? Well, right here in Colorado. So Alec Baldwin spoke about the Rust fatal shooting at the Boulder International Film Festival right here in Boulder, Colorado over the weekend, saying that the plaintiffs are financially motivated. That's simply saying they're just a bunch of money-grubbing victims in this case, and how dare they come after him. And he said that they are actually only two victims of the shooting that killed the cinematographer Helena Hutchins. Baldwin said, "What you have is a certain group of litigants on whatever side who their attitude is, well, the people who likely seem negligent have enough money, and the people who have money are not negligent. But we're not going to let that stop us from doing what we need to do in terms of litigation." Let me paraphrase that. "They're only coming after me because I'm rich. They're only coming after insurance companies because I'm rich. And we're not going to sue anybody else because, well, they don't have any money." Baldwin went on and said, "Why sue people if you're not going to get the money?" That's what they're doing. Because, as I've said before, ladies and gentlemen, it's always about the money. Well, Baldwin also stated and reiterated his claim of innocence during the Saturday interview, once again placing blame on armorer Hannah Gutierrez Reed, who has said that she loaded the antique Colt 45 revolver with what she believes were in fact dummy rounds. Additionally, Baldwin noted he is hopeful the investigation will reveal facts of his alleged innocence and serve as a starting point to modify the safety regulations on the film set. "I'm very hopeful when the facts come out, we will not be held criminally responsible, but it has changed my life. And I don't mean this in an ordinary sense that I was involved in something or something past," he said. "I mean, I was involved in a situation where somebody was killed. It's changed my life, just in terms of the functions of weapons in the film and television industry." The actor indicated that there would be a shift to using plastic or weighted weapons, as well as in all likelihood an elimination of all live weapons in favor of the fake ones. Now, Baldwin argues that the real guns remain in films because that's what the audience wants. That's what they want to see. Now, I don't know who Mr. Baldwin's attorneys are, but I'm pretty sure they would say, "Mr. Baldwin, please shut up. Please stop making statements," because all those statements will be used against him potentially at a criminal trial if charges are ever filed. None have been filed, and we'll give him the presumption of innocence. But they're certainly going to be used at a civil trial. And those language like, "Oh, they're only suing me because basically they're coming after me because I have money. They're not suing the people that don't have money." Well, that's usually the way it works, right? You can't get blood from a turnip. But all those can be used against you and misinterpreted, taken out of context. So I would just stop talking about the incidents and say, you know what, I can't comment upon further litigation. But as long as you keep doing it, we'll keep talking about it. Thanks, Alec. All right. Next, a quick update on the fake kidnapping. The sheriff who investigated Sherry Papini's disappearance and said today that other charges against people close to her may be looming and that she did not pull this off on her own. Her boyfriend was involved, and possibly her husband. So as reported late last week, California mom Sherry Papini was arrested for faking her own kidnapping back in 2016. Papini reportedly disappeared in Redding, California, while out for a jog in November of 2016. After a highly publicized search for the missing wife and mom of two, Papini was found and claimed that she had been kidnapped by two Hispanic women who beat her and gave her a brand. Police are saying that she made up the entire story to get attention and was staying with her now ex-boyfriend while she was missing. Apparently, she convinced the ex to pick her up and drive her to his apartment in Southern California after telling him her husband Keith was abusing her. Now, the Shasta County Sheriff Michael Johnson said that other charges would not surprise him. The ex-boyfriend has been identified as James Reyes, a 37-year-old sports shop worker, and he confessed the plot to police after being identified by DNA found on Sherry's clothes through a familial match. As of now, Reyes has not been charged, and neither has Sherry's husband Keith. Now, the sheriff did not name who else may face charges, but he said, "It's got to go to a grand jury. I certainly wouldn't be surprised. She didn't pull it off by herself. There are other people involved." Papini is currently being held in the Sacramento County Jail, where her attorney says she is not able to eat because of food allergies. She will appear in court tomorrow, Tuesday, 2 p.m., for a pre-trial detention hearing, and a preliminary hearing is scheduled for March 18th. Now, in the criminal complaint, police show how Papini and her husband spent money donated to them by strangers on her therapy and improving their home. According to the FBI, Papini's husband deposited the $49,000 raised by a GoFundMe page designed to help find Sherry into his bank account after she returned home on November 24th of 2016. He first wrote a check to himself for $31,000, then another for over $1,000. In total, Keith used around $8,000 of the money to pay off his personal credit cards. And I hope those personal credit cards went to monies to look for his wife when she was missing, because if not, it kind of looks like theft. Sherry used some of the $3,000 to pay off her own credit cards, and the pair used the rest of the GoFundMe money on personal expenses, according to the indictment. Personal expenses usually mean, you know, frivolous stuff, like going on vacation. You know, the woman had just been kidnapped, for God's sakes. She needed a little time, a little rest and relaxation. Oh, that's right. She wasn't really kidnapped, was she? Yeah. Okay. Is this a trend? I'm thinking this is a new trend. Wait until you hear this. A man reportedly came across a shopping cart near the intersection of Pennsylvania Avenue and Atlantic Avenue in Brooklyn, New York, at about 1:45 a.m. Thursday morning. The man peered inside the shopping cart and shockingly found a woman's torso. Now, the victim's head and extremities were missing. The man, who was peering into the shopping cart, then called 911. Authorities stated that the body did not have any stab or other gunshot wounds and didn't have any tattoos or marks that could help investigators identify the victim. The body, which did not look like it was decomposed, is believed to be either a white or Hispanic individual. Authorities have been looking at surveillance videos in hopes of seeing who left the shopping carts at the intersection, and officers on scene canvassed the area in search for additional body parts, but none have been found. The New York City Medical Examiner's Office will attempt to identify the victim, presumed to be an adult, through DNA testing, as identification through dental records and fingerprints is currently not possible at this time because there are no teeth and no hands, so they couldn't do that. As you may recall, we brought you the story last week of Taylor Shaw Business up in Wisconsin, who had dismembered her boyfriend after she choked him out while having and then dismembered him with a bread knife. I don't know. Maybe it's kind of a trend. But wait, there's more. Now, this weird story next comes literally in the neighborhood that I live in. Okay. Now, this is weird. Okay. Someone broke in and stole a box. Wait till you hear what this box had. A box of human heads from a truck in Colorado just the other day. The strange theft allegedly took place between 2:30 p.m. Wednesday and 9:30 a.m. Thursday while the freight company truck was parked in Denver's Central Park neighborhood. The heads were being transported for medical research purposes, according to authorities. I'm not exactly sure what medical purposes, but wouldn't you want to take them directly to wherever they're going just out of little decency, wouldn't you think? Apparently, the items that are missing are a blue and white box that had a label that said exempt human specimens. That's according to Denver police. A dolly was also stolen, and the police didn't know exactly how many of the missing heads were in the box. I mean, we've heard of stuff where people rob something or maybe take a car and they find a kid in the backyard, but what do you do with that? Really? Just weird. All right. Next on the docket, put this in the who knew. Look at this. This is apparently a phone, a working phone. And apparently it's all the trend, at least in Argentina these days. I didn't even know you could get a phone this small, but it is being smuggled into prisons. Why? Because people on the inside of prison have business to conduct. They got to be able to talk to people. How can they do that if they don't have their phone? I mean, it's almost cruel and unusual punishment not to give people a phone these days. And if you can't let them have one when they're in prison, you got to figure out a way to do it. So look at this tiny phone. Apparently it's the real deal. And they're smuggling it into prisons. I can only imagine how long till it gets to the prisons here in the United States, or if it's already here. Who knew that you could get a phone that small? I'd like to get one that just doesn't have any way of contacting me because it never stops. I guess I need one of those old flip phones. And next on the docket, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. But let's give you the winner from last week. Remember Christina Blair? She started an argument with a man who had a bumper sticker indicating that he was vaccinated against COVID. Blair then pulled the gun on the man in a threatening way, and the man called 911. Yeah, that's just stupid. That's just dumb. That's just impulse control issues. You shouldn't have a gun if you have impulse control issues like that. That's just stupid. Well, let's get to our dumb criminal of the day because, well, it just keeps it coming, ladies and gentlemen. You can't make this stuff up. Please meet Kenneth Clark Carlisle, 64. He apparently, allegedly, walked fully naked up his next door neighbor's driveway in Florida and then defecated on a glass table that was on the porch. Now, Carlisle, according to police, was captured relieving himself in broad daylight on two separate angles of the victim's home security video footage. Officers arrived on scene and spoke to Carlisle through the door of his RV camper, and he was still visibly naked and highly uncooperative. The naked man was arrested for criminal mischief, and a bond was set at $250. Now, Mr. Carlisle remains in custody as he is facing several other charges from December when he was arrested for allegedly drunk driving and discharging multiple firearms into a lake near his house. So Mr. Carlisle, I'm starting to think he maybe has some issues. My guess is when they came and spoke with him, he was probably still highly intoxicated, but at least he wasn't shooting weapons. He's just defecating on neighbors' lawn furniture. Mr. Carlisle, you are dumb. You are a dumb criminal of the day, and I hope you get some of the help that you desperately need. All right, that's all we have for you today. Thanks for watching. And remember, tomorrow, Tuesday Night Live, after hours, 6 p.m., live right here. Please join us. Thanks for watching. We'll see you next time on Crime Talk.